Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Who out there has ever been told that when you buy a packaged food, you should look at the label or you should try to read the ingredients? Try this once. Just pick five things out of your kitchen right now and look at the label and try to even pronounce the first five things that are on there. Sometimes it's really difficult to find foods that don't use a bunch of processed crap and junk in it, especially when you're looking for a quick snack to take on the road or take out with you. So that's why Jen and I always use Paleo Valley. We love their beef sticks, their turkey sticks. I also am a big fan of their bone broth protein bars. And when you look at the label and when you look at the ingredients, it's all things that you know. It's all things that you can pronounce. It's whole food ingredients that go into those products. So we love them. We know that you would love them. If you use code OPTIMAL, you'll be able to get 15% off your order. And I know that you'll love the taste and you'll be able to trust what you're putting in your body. So go to the link in the show notes. Use code OPTIMAL and get yourself some Paleo Valley snacks today.
All right. In this next podcast, we have our good friend Carrie Ford, which we're so excited to have her because not only is she going to talk about body image and food cravings and where this all really stems from and comes from, she really is not only an expert in it, but she's been through it herself. But then we're going to go so much deeper. So you're just going to have to keep listening to really get the deep stuff, the root of it all. Now, Carrie's been featured all around the world, from Entrepreneur to NBC to Self to Livestrong Fox, and she's the CEO and founder of Elevate with Carrie, which is an elite transformational coaching program and luxury brand created for high-performance women really ready to be successful in this part of their life. She was previously a celebrity trainer, but she's now recognized as an international motivational speaker, author, event host, and leading global authority in whole body wellness. She's spoken alongside some of the top industry experts, neuroscientists, and doctors, and she's also been nominated as one of the top 100 visionaries in healthcare by IFAH, which is the International Forum of Advancements in Healthcare. So pretty dang cool. She really is on a mission to empower millions of women to change diet culture, educate on science and the psychology of intuitive eating, and master self-love from the inside out. So let's dive in. Hello, beautiful Carrie. Thank you for being here with us. I'm so excited to dive into the body and get a little deeper than just, you know, what should you eat and how often should you eat? But it's really about understanding food on such a deeper level within the human experience. And I think you do that so well. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jen.
So one place we really like to just start with people, just to get a better idea of you and what drives you. Everyone kind of has this purpose and passion, especially people that are really successful at doing what they do. They know what it is driving them. So kind of what's your why behind pushing you to be successful in this area?
You know, one of my friends, and I often quote him, is Jeff Goins. And he said, it becomes the book you can't not write. And I really think that the walk that we go through is perfectly crafted for the walk that we get to lead others through. So despite it being painful and things like heartbreaking divorce and the eating disorder that I had, I feel like they're such gifts because those are things that taught me life lessons that now get to lead others through the same kind of hardships. So it becomes the path you cannot walk, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly huge. And I love that you're open, you know, vulnerably within your own experiences of your own walks of life, because that's how we really get to help other people is, and it's not for everyone, right? It's not for everyone to tell their story and share it, but for those who are willing in what you're doing and how you're helping people to be able to open up vulnerably and admit, you know, yes, I've been divorced and yes, I've been through my own trauma with food. I think that's just, even just saying that in itself can be so healing for people to feel not so alone.
Absolutely. And I've had clients that when we work on issues where they feel out of control with food or powerless around food, or even deeper, the suppression of how they've, you know, been not listening to their bodies, it's been so healing for them to be like, I am a binge eater. I am an overeater. And to just own that instead of experiencing further dissonance and making themselves wrong for something that could actually be super healing for their path and maybe the way in which they lead others.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I know that you talk a lot around this relationship with food, and I kind of want to dive into that a little bit more. And I know that we might already be tugging on some strings for people out there who might know that there's something that they need to start to address in the way they eat or the relationship that they have with food. And where do you kind of start with people in this realm? Because it can be so muddy and complicated.
It's a great word, muddy. The thing is, most people are aware. That's where it stops, though. They are aware and then they pursue the diet. But the diet is really a representation of restriction or a belief system where they think, I can't have that, or I'm the fat girl. If I eat pizza, I will gain X amount of weight. And so they just start living within the confines of self-imprisonment. So yes, we start with awareness, but it's really the power of pause in the awareness. So when you're in real time experiencing a moment of feeling out of control with whatever food or foods those might be, pausing and practicing the power of pause to question yourself is usually where we start.
And what does that mean? Like, so can you give us an example of what you might pause and say or feel? Like, what is the intention behind the pause? Am I pausing because I'm saying, do I really need to eat this right now? Is there shame behind the pause? Like, what does the pause really do?
It's almost like when you're when someone is enraged or they're so angry, they say, I'm seeing red. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they become blind and black out to the experience. It's very similar with food, where they feel out of control and they experience such deep shame that they kind of bypass that. And it goes right into the high that the food is providing them. So on a surface level, it may appear like they're seeking comfort, but perhaps the food represents something even deeper that is embedded in their subconscious. And I will walk them through a process I called food mapping, where we actually start to identify on a deeper level what those foods are, why that occurred, like the inception of that powerlessness, and what else, this is important, was going on in your life at the time that became incepted. But it does, to your question, Jen, it does start with, if you're eating a bowl of ice cream and you're scooping it in the bowl, pausing, trying to calm yourself down and stay kind of, you know, leaned back in that energy and ask, not do I need this? Because they may be out of touch with whether they need it or not. Emotionally, they may feel like they need it. But do I want this? Because then they're listening to a deeper voice. Now, I find that people often go through two paths when we get to that point, where they may be still in kind of this, I'm in blackout mode and I don't really know if I want this. And suddenly the bowl is full of ice cream and suddenly the spoon is in my mouth and I still don't know if I want it. So there I would say, creating permission is going to be their freedom. Mm-hmm. Because if they can come from a place of permission, it starts to remove this, you can't do it, you shouldn't do that, do you really need that, and this self-judgment.
I think that's really important. And I think one of the really difficult things, and one of the things that I struggle with, is all of the information that's out there. And if you're somebody mm-hmm. who's trying to print in these new messages, have these tactical pauses for yourself, start to do that healing from within, and then all of a sudden you tune into Instagram and the algorithms have realized that you're, you know, trying to do all this work in your life. And so it starts kicking all of this fad diet stuff at you and all of this labeling of these foods that you need to avoid and all of this negatively tilted language around all of this healing that you're doing. What do you consult with people on how to consciously consume the media that's out there surrounding diet culture?
I think that's a really great question. And it's really powerful because our diet, by way of definition of what we're consuming, is not only just the food that we eat, but it's the things that our mind consumes as well. So the body knows a yes or a no. And what I mean by that is, if you really connect to your heart space, not think of the answer, but just kind of go into almost a meditative state, if you're able to do that, if you're practiced at that, and ask your body a yes or no, it also knows, does this feel good right now based on what my truth or my experience is? Or does this not feel so good? Or a better question might be, does this support the life and the feelings that I'm trying to create about myself and the relationship I want to have with myself or not?
And what is, like, say you come to the point where you're like, okay, but I know this doesn't necessarily support my body. Like, obviously, I know there's processed stuff and there's sugar. So how do you allow the freedom and the permission to just be like, but right now I really want this. And even if I know it's not good for me, like, how do you drop the shame? And when is it permission? When is it, for me, it still feels muddy personally.
Yeah. And a lot of women struggle with this. And Brene Brown actually says the number one source of shame for women is their body and weight. But if we're coming from a place of should or shouldn't, or good or bad, or trying to define it based on a law or self-principled thinking, that gets to be something where we get to be really curious about. But as with anything, there is a gradient, and there is a gradient of healing, especially by way of learning intuitive eating. And intuitive eating is the practice of listening to your body to be the compass and the guide for when you're hungry, when you're full, and even if you enjoy that food. So an example would be, way back in the day when I had my eating disorder, I was anorexic in college, and I also had severe disordered eating when I was fitness modeling and doing fitness competitions. I was obsessed with Nutri-Grain bars, because at a certain point in my life, I think it was 8th or 9th grade, I used to eat them every day. And I associated that with feeling free, being able to eat whatever I wanted and be skinny were the words that I would use. And so when I started learning intuitive eating, that was one of the foods where I felt powerless around, or I became obsessed with. It was the thing in the room I couldn't ignore. And that permission for me allowed me to stop and remove that emotional charge around the food. And slowly but surely, through the gradient of healing and being really committed to every time I eat the Nutri-Grain bar, asking myself then, do I still like this? How does this taste? Do I want this? Suddenly, I don't even remember the last time I had a Nutri-Grain bar. So the gradient of healing and permission allowed that to go away. The fear is, what if I only want Nutri-Grain bars, right? Or cake or pizza or whatever somebody's thing is. And that's what we get to be detached from right now, at least, because if you're in relationship to healing and true freedom, you just have to be in the discomfort of not really being attached to an outcome right now of like, I want it to look like this. I'm doing this to lose weight. It's simply just to gain your power back.
Yeah, I think that's so important because, you know, I hear some muddied conversations sometimes when I listen to the experts in nutrition and health, and I've heard people that I respect, and they kind of laugh at intuitive eating. Well, if my body wants cookies, then obviously I'm going to want cookies, and that's not what's best for me, you know. And so it's, I think understanding truly what intuitive eating means is so important for people to understand. So can you dissect that just a little bit more? Like, say I am having a particular craving, what does that actually mean in terms of intuitive eating? And do I just go for it and eat it?
It depends, would be my answer. So I've deemed a term emotional currency, and that's the positive or negative charge around food. There may be positive memories associated with a food, such as grandma's pecan pie that we bake every Christmas, for example. Or there could be negative things with food, whereas it's the thing that you wait for everyone to go to bed with and you feel out of control with, and you're in the pantry eating Oreos. Like, and I use that example specifically because that was me at one point. But getting clear on what is the driving force behind that first, like deeper than the awareness, because this isn't about having a blanket excuse to quote unquote eat all the cake all the time. Because in truth, someone that really loves themselves and is coming from a loved-based motivation or an aligned place, they're not eating a whole cake. Mm-hmm. Someone that really loves themselves is not eating that way because physically they probably feel ill.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So we have to go through the gradient of healing first before you get to the other side where you're truly liberated from it. But the problem is most people don't stick to, I think, the gradient of healing. And then the misconception becomes, well, I'm eating whatever I want. Yeah, for a period of time. But then don't be surprised when you get through to the other side of healing that because you're allowed to eat whatever you want, you don't even want those things. Because we actually want the cake more when we say we can't have it.
Oh, yeah. That always happens. If we restrict it, then I only think about it more.
Yeah, the minute I think about restricting, I want to go eat like it's the Last Supper.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Totally. And you're kind of hitting for me a little bit, because coming from a place of being an athlete where, you know, our goal in football was always to gain more weight and put on more pounds. And we just kind of used it as that excuse to do it by any means necessary. And, you know, what I know now is there's plenty of ways to gain good mass and do it in a way that is very helpful and healthful for our bodies, and still within that mix in the good foods that emotionally can charge you up, like some cookies or ice cream or things like that. But I would consume those things until I would literally be sitting there feeling sick. And I always talk about my history as an athlete as that binge purge style athlete who just felt like it was okay to eat whatever, whenever, and not worry about it because I'm an athlete and I just need to gain weight.
Sure.
So you talk about your history in fitness and doing fitness modeling. And also, I think I read that you did some celebrity training and stuff. And then you compare that to where you're at now. And I know a lot of people who might be out there, you know, looking for, you know, this reason, or they have this desire to make some changes in their life. But I know a lot of people really need like that horizon event that really convinces them or tips them into this life of change and changing a lot of their mindsets around food. Would you mind talking at all into like, when was that moment for you when you really started making the change?
My divorce was the ultimate breakdown in life as I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I had followed everybody's rules according to what they said and who I should be and who they thought I was and how I should show up. And the entire time I was betraying myself, but I only knew that at the level of consciousness I was at. But in the breakdown of life as I knew it, I mean, I'm talking about moving out of an HGTV renovated house that was three stories with the in-ground pool into an apartment with two kids as a single mom. And I had never lived on my own ever before.
Mm-hmm.
I met my ex-husband when I was 22. It was 3 months out of college. We moved in fairly quickly together. I don't regret any of that. He's an awesome guy. But I felt like something inside me was not fulfilled and it should be based on all the check boxes I had checked. And that got me really curious because I'm like, I did everything I was supposed to. I've been the good girl. Why am I not happy? And I knew there was more, but I made myself wrong for that. Probably for 2 or 3 years, I was seeking like, maybe I need more girl time. Maybe I'm having trouble adjusting to being a mother. Maybe all these other things outside of myself that are supposed to bring me joy and fulfillment, when really I was the common denominator. I was disconnected from myself. And so I got really curious. And the way that that came about with my life purpose and the way that I serve people now was, you feel like a part of your life is missing, or that there's something you have yet to figure out that you should be able to. Because, you know, I consider myself a fairly smart woman, a very accomplished professional, a great mom, all these things. And yet I felt like, what did I do wrong to mess this up? Meaning my marriage. Mm. And so I started this like inner revolution of real self-love. No more bubble baths and face masks, although I love those things, but that was not actually the key to unlocking deeper levels of fulfillment in myself. And I learned how to actually love myself as an action through meditation, through honoring boundaries, through setting boundaries, through understanding where someone ended and I began. And that became my inner revolution and the ways in which I teach women to tap into deeper levels of their own intuition through food, body, exercise, but all areas of life.
And did you seek coaching? Did you read books? How did you start to say, okay, I'm going on this journey to really discover what self-love means? Because as you said, it gets thrown around a lot and sometimes it can look like self-care, but it doesn't always mean that that's self-love.
Actually, I love that question. I invested in a coach for the first time after my divorce. He had bought me out of the house and I thought, I'm going to do this for me. Because at the time, I had been taking a stab at the entrepreneurial thing. But really, I was like playing entrepreneur, because I wasn't making an actual living off of it. And at one point, I was forced to kind of go back into corporate consulting. And I thought, I'm going to do this for me, and I'm going to invest in coaching. It was the scariest thing I've ever done. Not because of the money. It appeared like it was about the money, but the actual scary part was closing the back door on who I thought I was and saying yes to the belief that I was called somewhere else without fully seeing it with my eyes. And once I made that choice to say yes to myself there, everything else in my reality shifted. And since then, I mean, last year alone, I spent $60,000 in personal development. And I don't say that to say, like, the more you spend, the more transformation you experience. But it does require a different visceral experience in the body to call yourself to higher levels of being, to play a bigger game and say, I'm not available for any of that other stuff anymore. I'm ready to close the back door and go all in on myself.
I love that. And I want to kind of tumble that into this thing that I've seen you talk about a little bit, called the billion-dollar body principle, and just how is it that when you focus more on your body and yourself, now you as an entrepreneur, that just helps you become that much more successful in business and as an entrepreneur?
Oh, I love this question. The billion-dollar body is a state of being. And what I mean by that is whatever attachment we have to it being and arriving at a certain pant size, a specific weight, looking a certain way, maybe it's even to look like an old picture of ourselves, it's actually the feeling you think you're going to receive from that on the other end. Sure, without question, you're going to be more energetic, you're going to be healthier, you're going to be more vibrant, things like that. But you're actually seeking fulfillment, joy, confidence, permission, freedom to wear the damn outfit, right? Like all of these things, but we wait to be ready to have it, thinking it exists in an achievement of some sort. So if we have everything we need right now, and we could show up as the woman or the man that we already know is possible for us, how would that human run their business? How would they show up in a relationship? It would be very different, perhaps, than what's currently going on.
Yeah, I think that's like the typical mindset, right? Once I become this person, once I lose the weight, then I'll look good in the outfit. Once I have the job, once I have the clients, then I'll be able to do what I want. And we always are looking at that end result rather than focusing on what we have available to us right in this moment and appreciating that. It's like we wait to appreciate things until sometimes they're gone.
Absolutely.
So how do we start to really like step into that? What is something that you can tell people to, something they maybe can identify right now within themselves, as a question to within themselves? Like, how can someone start to identify where they are right now in their thinking and their patterns, and how they can start to begin this journey?
Well, I would ask them, what do you feel is the biggest obstacle or struggle between where you are now and where you want to be? And when I say that, I don't mean where you want to be as a means of like goals. I mean like the inner power that you want to show up in, right? Like permission to wear the outfit. I have some women that are like, I just want to wear a crop top. And I'm like, who's telling you that you can't? Like, let's show up as her now. Again, it's going to command a certain thing. So I would first ask that, because it's going to highlight where there is a gap in identity. And then from there, what is required to let go of and shift into as they level up?
You know, it's conversations like this, and it's the consulting and coaching that you do with your clients that you have, that I think are really what's going to help change and morph our health industry as we know it in our country. Jen and I, you know, we both come from the traditional education system where we went and we got our doctorates, and we just realized once we started really getting into it that, man, we can't serve people the way that we were hoping to coming into this. And I think that I saw that you recently got top 100 visionary, or like being a visionary in healthcare award. And so first I'm wondering, like, how do you do something to get that type of an award? And where do you see the work that you're doing and other people that are in the same kind of field that you are really taking our health industry in this country?
in some ways, I'm like, I don't know what I did to deserve that award because this is the work I'm called to do. But also I'm willing to question everything. Like you guys said, you know, you come from a very quote unquote traditional upbringing, background, and education system. And after the breakdown of my divorce, I was like, I'm sorry, but I'm going to make my own rules and I'm going to do everything that I've maybe wanted to do and didn't feel I had permission to do. And I'm going to seek out all the ways in which that I want to be free and pursue kind of like the woo and the weird and like, let's get alternative. And so that's what I did in terms of learning different healing modalities. And when I say healing modalities, I mean somatic work. And I've created a process called Body Speak, which is a blend of somatic work and meditation, but basically releases trapped energy in the body so that the emotional body and the physical body can realign. And so the award for top 100 visionaries in global wellness is super interesting because actually next week I'll be on a panel with a bunch of doctors. And part of me, I'm not going to lie, is like, oh, imposter syndrome. I don't have my doctorate. And yet every time I have these conversations with other doctors like yourselves and in the industry, they're like, that is changing everything. And I know I'm not the only one to do somatic work, but there is such a need and a desire very clearly in terms of futuristic thinking for people to feel back in their power of being able to know that they're a self-healer.
So true. For people who are listening, who are like, okay, well, what is somatic work, right? Because especially coming from physical therapists that people are listening to, you know, they know movement in terms of exercise. This exercise will help this pain point, right? But when we mm-hmm. talk about somatic work, we're not talking on that level. So what is somatic work? How can people start to understand this?
Yeah. So somatic work is literally the mind-body connection. And it's a therapy modality where we worked with, again, trapped energy in the body. So there was a study done on water. And I don't have the specific details on what the study was, but the fascinating thing was that you can speak words of love to one thing of water and you speak words of hate to the other water. And the water you spoke words and energy of love to, it was crystal clear. The other water got cloudy. And we're 70% water. There are things that are alive and active in our emotional body, such as stress that we carry, perhaps in our neck and our back, that is stored there, even though in this present moment, there's not actually something stressful going on, for example. Mm. Oftentimes, when we do the food mapping process, we identify that, oh, they clearly had an uptick in sensitivity around gluten or some other food around the same time that maybe they were in an abusive relationship. Mm. So where is that in the body? Where is that? Where does that feel alive and activated? And that's how we really start to make that mind-body connection because the body follows what the mind says.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And that's why we have studies as well, which I think still people need to hear over and over again that we cannot just dictate posture and structure or MRI images to pain. Like it just, we know that now. We know that we can have structural changes, posture changes, and have no pain. So what does that mean, yeah. right? It's got to be something deeper. It's something all connected to our emotion and our brain and so much more within our body rather than just this physical aspect. So the fact that you're bringing in the literally the emotions into your physical body is so healing on so many different levels, you know, from food to physical to everything.
To bring a more visual example, perhaps, that might be a relatable, you know, circumstance for someone. If you don't feel safe to actually be a lighter weight, quote unquote, I use the word skinny because most people, you know, allude that to some level of success. If you don't feel safe to lose the weight, you will stay the current weight you are, or you will gain more weight because your body and your nervous system actually doesn't feel safe because there's probably something trapped in the emotional body that needs to be released and or a belief around, let's say you had an experience with pizza at 7 years old where you're told, oh, you're the big girl, you can't have pizza. Maybe on some level, subconsciously, you're still acting from the space of thinking that you have to be the fat 7-year-old. So you're always going to be acting from the space of that as your truth and continue to experience more of the same until you liberate that version of yourself.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, going through the work too, I remember, you know, there's people who've had sexual traumas.
Yeah.
And abuse. And there are times when people pack on weight subconsciously again to avoid being wanted, like physically.
Yeah. Yeah, they literally don't feel safe because the fear of being wanted, which again may seem crazy to say, like logically it's like, oh, I want to be wanted.
Right.
But it actually seems scary because the association is that being wanted equals being abused.
A lot of this conversation wants to make me go on a little soapbox style rant about our healthcare system as it exists now, because I can't count the amount of times that I've been told, like, no, you shouldn't ask the patient those types of questions, or no, you shouldn't have that, you know, close of a relationship with your patient, or you shouldn't share those types of things with your patient. You need to be professional. And I'm just like, well, I shouldn't be there emotionally for my patient. Like, what kind of crackpot system is this? Like, I started noticing more and more, the more that I was there for the patient, and if they were lonely, talking about it, being there for them in that space, like not doing things hands-on with them until they felt emotionally safe with me and comfortable in the room. Like, I continue to get sent these people that were, quote, the trouble patients. And I hated that we would even call them the trouble patients. I'm like, right. No, you're the troubled provider who doesn't feel comfortable sitting in a room for 2 minutes talking to someone about their life. You immediately want to try and attack this symptom and make them feel like a test subject on the table getting poked at. Like, why do you think they haven't healed yet? And so I think that this type of work, I think some of the research that we can finally do with MRIs and associating it with pain and realizing there's not a lot of these real tight-knit connections that we thought there were, are going to be the bringing down of this traditional system where we separate the psycho and the social and the somatic, and that's where we are bringing together all of these systems of the mind and the body and the spirit, and understanding that if we don't treat people that way, we're not going to help them find their true health or their ability to find self-love in their lives.
Yeah. And that is the way when people reach out and they're like, well, I'm aware, but I just don't know like how to do the work. I don't know how to access these parts of myself. And that is the access. Like, that is the work in order to do that, because, and it's unconventional. Like, not a lot of people are doing this kind of work. So it might seem a little crazy, but how else is the way you've been doing it working for you? Because it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And at one point I, you know, my body was in such stress from over dieting. I had a miscarriage. I had low progesterone. I remember having a spray tan be metabolized on my skin the day of my fitness show.
What does that mean?
Literally the spray tan was starting to break down through my skin. Oh. Like, it was starting to eat it and consume it because I was so carb deprived.
Oh my goodness.
It looked like a faux finish wall. I went back to get a second coat and I'm like, something's wrong with this spray tan.
Yeah.
And then we realized that actually it was from being so severely deprived.
Oh my goodness. And as we talk about, you know, deprivation within food and diet and body, are there times that you still struggle with food or cravings or understanding that within your own body and your own health?
Sure. I think that my struggle comes from the moment I sense that I want to restrict. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to love myself. There's still a desire sometimes to restrict.
Mm.
And I don't struggle with cravings or feeling out of control. But I do notice the moment I think about wanting to restrict, or I start romanticizing the hope on the other side of what I think that might promise me, is the minute that then I want to go eat all the things.
Mm-hmm.
So in just noticing that and really being intimate with myself to go, oh, okay, there's the hook. I'm not going to take the bait.
Yeah.
So I know in all the work that you do with people, and you've mentioned a few of the things that you've put out there to maybe help people, you know, work through what they're going through. But I also know you have these sanctuary retreats. Can you talk a little bit about what you do with people within these retreats? Is this like the ultimate way that you would like to be able to work with people?
I love having options. So it won't be the only way I continue to work with people, especially because not everyone especially with COVID too, can travel at the moment to this private island in the British Virgin Islands. But this is a series of retreats that we're offering in person that we've never done before. Lauren Zoller and Brittany Faith Turner and myself are facilitating these. We've literally rented a private island. It's for a fairly seasoned professional. It's for women. But really the whole goal here is to break through, you know, limiting beliefs and experience something that you've never experienced before. And I'll say, like, one of my most transformative experiences for myself was when I was in Tulum. And, you know, I've done all the self-healing and I continue to be committed to that, you know, whether it's meditation in my bedroom or at the gym doing things or other written exercises, journaling. But there's something to be said, and you guys know this because you're super adventurous. And Dom, I think you're borderline crazy for all the ice baths and things you do.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
argue that.
There's something to be said about putting your physical body in a new experience and then adjusting your baseline of whatever fear or talk track comes up. And so for me, a new level of liberation became when I jumped four stories into a cenote in Tulum. And so sanctuary retreats are really going to be a way that women can elevate their inner circle, normalize the books and all of their success, but also learn how to be more instead of do more and transform their body from the inside out by having new visceral experiences.
I mean, this is so huge. And people, you know, you really don't understand it unless you try it and you do it. And I remember even the first time that I was starting to go into development work, which didn't mean just reading a book or listening to a podcast. It literally meant being in person in a retreat like you're talking mm-hmm. about. But the moment that I did that, I remember, I mean, I used to, which is going to sound weird to people, but I used to be scared about showing up on social media in terms of showing my face and talking. I would always show my body in terms of what it could do, cool handstands or look at these exercises, but I was so afraid for people to judge who I was. And it wasn't until I went through one of these types of programs where I, and this was just like the first step too of it, where I really was like, oh my gosh, I can show up fully myself and I can allow people to into my passion of what I do and why I do it. I mean, it's so silly to be blocking people of you. And it sounds crazy, but until you really dive in and you experience it, you're realizing that you're not showing up your full self and allowing other people to really see who you are and the beauty of who you are.
Mm. Yeah, stripping all of the layers away.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I mean, you brought up like the ice baths and stuff, which I'm not going to argue is crazy, but
it's so great though.
Yeah. And in part, that's why I do it. And that's one of the places that I found growth through one of my hardest times when I was recovering from a really bad and traumatic car accident and helped a lot of my concussive symptoms just melt away when I would sit in cold water. And I combined that with a few other of my own, you know, growth based and neurologic practices that I dove into. And I think that once people find that thing that puts them in an uncomfortable place enough that they just feel something ping inside of them, that's mm-hmm. really when you know like what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, because my baseline for what was scary shifted completely as a result of jumping four stories. And so it was like, okay, what else you got? Let's go.
Oh yeah.
And it wasn't about like coming home to do more and show up bigger and all the checklists. It was just like, oh, I'm more myself than I've been because I broke through a fear.
Oh yeah. That is so huge. So if people are feeling the pings and they're like, okay, let me just explore. Let me see. How can they start to work with you in various capacities or maybe even take on one of these retreats?
Yeah. So we have the website Shift with Sanctuary, SHIFT with Sanctuary. And if you're interested in that, we would love for you to apply to be part of it. And it's pretty limited. There'll be about 15 women, 15 to 20 women in that. But it's part of a bigger series that goes into 2022. So that's one website. And then you can also find me on Instagram at the Carrie Ford, KeriFord. Or you can find me on my website, elevatewithcarrie.com. And I have group programs. I offer one-to-one, though I'm almost on a wait list. After this week, I'm going to be on a wait list for that. But there's different ways you can definitely, work with me, and we can decide, my team and I, what is the best fit, if any. But definitely reach out and get in touch.
That's amazing. Thanks so much for being here, for sharing all these little nuggets on how to elevate just in this podcast. Definitely encourage everybody to go check out Carrie, and I'm sure that we will be chatting with you soon. And there we go, wrapping up yet another incredible interview. Carrie, just a great friend of Jen and mine, and so much great messaging she has there on how to really step into your best self, health-wise, emotionally, creating that new relationship with food. Go check out some of her resources. And remember, if you loved anything in this podcast, please share it out on your own platform. Subscribe, leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. That really helps us get seen that much more. Let us know if you have recommendations for interviews, for topics for Jen and I to do on our PT Pearls. And if you're looking for another way that you can support us, check out Dry Farm Wines. This is a new partnership that Jen and I are getting into, an amazing wine company. And if you're looking for wines you can trust, this is one. They are grown on small family farms. They have no pesticides, herbicides, or other sides that might be used in vineyards. They're made on dry farms, meaning that they don't use irrigations. That's why it's called Dry Farm Wines. Everything. They use organic grapes, small batch. Everything about this company is stuff that Jen and I can just stand behind and really love. And they ship the wines right to you. It's a wine club, so you'll get wines every month. And if you sign up right now using the link in the show notes, you'll be able to get one extra bottle of wine for just a penny on this order. So check them out, Dry Farm Wines. You can go to dryfarmwines.com/optimal, or just check the link in the show notes and keep an eye out for more episodes coming up.